Don't be afraid to make a decision and make a mistake. That's how you learn and that's how you grow. I think some of the biggest mistakes I made in my career, what I've seen working with hundreds of business owners, is they're afraid to just make that decision. Think about it, you know, plan it, but make the decision because they're afraid they're going to be wrong. You might be. And have a plan B if you are wrong. But, you know, don't sit there and be scared to make that decision because you're just wasting time.
Welcome back to Badass Women in Business Podcast. We are super excited for our guest today, Marla DiCarlo, who is the co-owner of Biz Navigators. Marla, please tell our audience a little bit about who you are.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here today. I love talking about this. So just a little bit about myself. I'm an accountant. I started in actually property management, real estate and development in Phoenix, Arizona, and moved on to mergers and acquisitions about 10 years into being an accountant at that firm, and fell in love with small business. My parents actually had pet shops growing up, so I had an entrepreneurial, you know, experience as a child and in my teenage years. But I really did, in the time that I was doing working, you know, with business owners to see if they were a fit for our portfolio, I just started to realize, man, first off, I love these people. I love the grit, the resilience, the drive. I love everything about small business. But further, what I realized is, oh my gosh, there's so many business owners that need help. And I know I'm not saying anything earth-shattering there, but it's so true, you know, about being underserved. And so in 2009, I started a fractional CFO company called Kaizen Business Results. And my focus there was, okay, I knew that business owners needed someone who thought differently from them, someone that could help them with really looking at the financials and having a plan and, you know, preparing for growth. But then I also realized, my gosh, there's some really bad accounting out there. So we added accounting and bookkeeping to those services. And I was really a pioneer in starting that. Back then, fractional CFOs, I'd explain to people what that was, and grew that to about 225 clients. You know, I had a total over the year and years of about 50 subs and employees. And then I sold it to a private equity group who said that, hey, we love the idea. We're doing the same thing. Why didn't you partner with us? And that's what I was looking for. So I did. I always tell that part of the story, though, because that was really interesting, selling my business. You know, before that, I had been through hundreds of transactions, but never something I created. And so that was different. There's a whole story there with going through that. I realized that that was going to be very difficult to continue to be, you know, a part of the company, but not be a decision maker. And I ended up joining Raincatcher. So Raincatcher was a business brokerage company with the idea of, there are so many baby boomers out there transitioning businesses, and there's so many opportunities for small business owners. Why don't we start to talk more about that online? And so started a bunch of thought leadership around not only selling a business, but what do you need to do in order to create an asset, like a true business that could be sold. And so started, you know, thought leadership around that within the small business community, purchased the company in 2018, grew it. We ended up winning like Inc. 5,000, 376 out of 5,000. I was named, you know, top 50 CEO women in Denver and lots of accolades. But what I realized is as we started to grow, our team was like 27 brokers. I had a business partner and four managing directors. We were across all the United States. But what I realized is, oh my gosh, we're swimming in a pool that I didn't really want to be in. And that was, I really have a passion working for business owners that are in that 1 to 5 million range. I feel it's an underserved community. And I feel like there's a lot of opportunity to help those business owners. So I took a buyout last year for my management team and started Biz Navigators, which is a new business brokerage company that I'm running and growing, and I'm excited to, you know, be helping business owners again and really being focused on where I feel a calling to help them. I really have a passion and a purpose there.
I 100% align with you on the segment of business ownership that you've picked, because that's also my sweet spot. I love the, well, I'd go from 500 to 10 is really where I think there are opportunities for growth. But I want to go back and slow down to your first exit. What was the impetus for that? Did you always know starting that first business that you would exit at some point in time? Or did that come because the opportunity arose? Or was that just something that you had been thinking about at some point in time in the cycle of growth of your business?
That's such a great question, because I don't talk about that a lot, that, you know, to be honest, I did always know that that wasn't going to be kind of the end of my journey. I started the business with the intention of, one, becoming a true small business owner. I had owned a couple of businesses before that. I had a pet sitting business, and my husband and I had a couple cell phone stores long ago. But that was the first one that I created, I grew, and I did know, this is something that I feel is important now, but I don't see myself retiring doing this, if that makes sense. And why I started looking is two parts. One, it is really hard to grow a business with high paid professionals. So CFOs are not cheap.
And you tell me.
And you know, it's so funny when I look back on that, I'm like, gosh, I really did figure out the accounting and bookkeeping side. I mean, that I had down, because it was just about how do you hire the right personality? How do you set up a model so that you can duplicate it? How do you set up a system, kind of the hit by the bus scenario? So if somebody's gone, somebody can pick it up. So I figured that out. But the CFO side was so hard, because you have to not only like people, but you have to understand the numbers. And I'm just going to stop there, because I get myself in trouble every time. But you know, I mean, you know, most CPAs do not go into the business because they just love working with people. You know, they love the numbers. They love using that part of their brain, right?
Right. That is such a good point.
It's true though. You know, and so I kept trying different models and I just couldn't work it out. And so what I thought that I needed, and I still think I made the right decision, is I thought I needed some capital to help back the company. Cause at that point, you know, I was just hitting my 10 years, well, a little under 10 years, sorry, I can do my math, you know, 8 years. And I'd overcome that 5-year milestone. So we had hit 1 million and we were growing. And what I realized is, gosh, first off, I need some capital. But second, it sure would be nice to have other peers surrounding me, helping me through this journey. And all of that was true. Incredible group. They're still in business. They're doing a great job. They're expanding services. What I didn't think about was my exit strategy. As funny as that might sound with what I do, I didn't. I thought, okay, this sounds like an excellent, you know, opportunity. Let's do it. But once I was in the seat, like I tell the story about, I'm sitting in a training room and I was continuing on as the market president in Colorado. And I'm sitting in the training room and the private equity guys had just left and they had just talked about how, listen, we've got to make this more profitable. So we're going to look at getting rid of these services. And I don't think we should work with these customers anymore. So let's talk to them and let them go. And these couple of employees, I don't know that they're a good fit, Marlon. So I think that we need to replace them. And they walked out of the room and I looked over at my trainee buddy and I said, did they just tell me, like, Mama Bear came out, right? I'm like, did they just tell me that they're going to replace my services, my employees, and my customers? And my trainee buddy said, yeah, but the problem is, Marla, it's not yours anymore. And I went, ouch, okay, that's a problem.
Very interesting. So Well, private equity has a few different lenses, right? Obviously, it gets you where you want to be and what you need to continue with the business. But I would say your experience is not unique to most small businesses that choose that route. What kind of advice can you give to people that may be looking, or private equity is their only option to sell? Like, how can they make that a less painful and maybe more seamless experience for themselves? And potentially, it sounds like coming to the table with knowing what your exit plan is so that you can, you know, kind of guide that decision. I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
You know, I'll tell you first off, I'm gonna kick that question off with coming back this way. Private equity sometimes gets a really bad rap. Yes. I tell you, do I have some bad stories? Of course I do. Do I have some good stories? Hundreds of them. What's important when you're selling your business is to first understand, what are your objectives post-closing? What does that look like? So what, not only like, are you going to golf for a year? Because you're not, some people buy a sailboat, which is funny. But, you know, what I'm talking more than just like, you know, the actions you're going to take after you exit, but what do you want that business sale to look like? You know, if once it's all done, are your employees raving fans? Are your customers raving fans? Are you happy because you know you chose the right person? And each buyer type has a different style, methodology to how they're going to purchase and run that business. And so you need to understand that, you know, private equity is normally going to buy a company and sell it, you know, 5-10 years later, usually around 5 years. And so you need to be aware of that, because if that doesn't align with, they're about profit most of the time. And so if that doesn't align with your post-closing objectives, then you should do something different. And you need to communicate that and talk about that with your broker when you're working with them. I think that's one of the number one questions that always stumps business owners when they come to me to sell. And I say to them, okay, great. Well, we're going to talk about valuation and we're going to talk about the process. But before we get there, I want to know from you, what does that look like the day you sell? And what does that year look like? And what does 5 years later look like? And they kind of sit there and they go, boy, nobody's asked me that question. I think that's part of it. And so if you know the buyer types and what they're about, and you know who you're going to target to sell your business, then you end up not being disappointed. And so I think what happens is a lot of times private equity comes in to purchase a business, and quite frankly, I don't think that broker or that coach has talked to them about what that might look like. And so they're just not set up for that. They're not prepared.
I appreciate you taking it there, because I know that's a question that Christy and I both ask when we are talking to people interested in working with us, is like, what is the vision and what is the plan past this business? And very often we get deer in headlight looks of, what do you mean what's after? Like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And I mean, obviously with some businesses, it's highly possible they get passed down generationally, but for others, it may not be possible, because you always have to be prepped for an exit. And so I've read a lot of things about men, not all of them, but many men going into business with an exit plan, while many women go into business because they have a skill that is often underrated at their, you know, corporate entity. They haven't had the opportunity like you to have been raised in a family of entrepreneurs or have had earlier entrepreneurial experiences. But where do you think that gap is coming from in terms of people not looking at exit as an option and also looking at it as a stepping stone to their bigger adventure?
Yeah, that's really interesting about that more men come into a small business with an exit plan. I did not know the stats, so thanks for sharing that. That's interesting. And I'm thinking why, you know, that could be with the, you know, the gender, you know, why would males be more inclined to think about that strategy to exit? But anyway, I could go down several rabbit holes with that. Coming back to the question, I think Right. We could probably spend another podcast, right? What I see is two parts, really. One is most business owners, small business, so lower market, most business owners start that business either because it was, you know, a family generational thing or company, or they had a product or service that they were very good at selling. And they thought, boy, it'd be nice to make money for myself and not make it for someone else. And mm-hmm. I think I would like to do that. I think I would like to have that opportunity to build something that's mine. When you do that, there's so many tasks, so many roles that you're getting ready to take on that I don't even think they realize how much is ahead of them, right? It just, so far, they've just been looking at, well, I have this product or service that I need to run, or hey, mom and dad is giving me this, or grandma and grandpa is giving me this company. And I've seen others run companies, and so I'm just going to start building it. And a lot of times they do, they're almost successful in spite of themselves because they do end up growing it. But what happens is they don't think about the things, the drivers of value that create not only a profitable business that can sustain and grow and build over the years, but also why a buyer would be interested in purchasing their business. I talk a lot of times about blinders, you know, having blinders on as a business owner, you know, your tunnel vision. You're like, oh my gosh, all I can think about is straight ahead right now. How do I get to this next contract so I can finally hire some employees, or how do I finally build, you know, diversify my income so I'm not dependent on just a couple customers? And so there's these milestones that we have to hit, otherwise we don't have a business. But what happens is when we have that tunnel vision and we're not looking 360 at what we're doing, you know, building this business, we end up making mistakes that sometimes it's hard to unravel, or sometimes it's hard then to catch up. And so what I mean by that is, you know, a business owner is almost always going to build a business that is dependent on them because usually they're wearing all the hats. But you have to start thinking from day one, how do I start to build a company and document these processes and these systems that I have in place so that not too far down the road, I can bring in somebody who can help me so that I can start to get this business, you know, where it's not dependent on me 100%. And that's hard to do. And a lot of business owners don't even start looking at doing that until 5-6 years into a business. And then you've got a problem, you know. The other thing I think that's the second part to that is a lot of business owners, I don't think, understand what it takes to build not only a good company, but a premium company, a company that you have options to be able to sell that company at any time, and then also have better options what that looks like when you're selling. So not only the purchase price, get it the purchase price you want, but also have the deal terms you want. And also further, like in my situation, choose who you want to sell it to, because that legacy is really important. So I think for most business owners, it's not that they do it on purpose. They just don't know what they don't know. And that's why I think like this these type of podcasts are so important, because this is stuff where we live this. We see this with the clients that we work with every day. We know that this is the truth. So the more that we can get this out to these business owners and help them to start thinking about their business differently, they'll be so much more successful and we'll have happier clients, right?
Absolutely. I want to go back to something that you mentioned, which were the value drivers in a business that actually help them achieve that purchase price that they're looking for. What would you say are the top 3 to 5 value drivers in a business that every business owner should be focused on, no matter what stage of growth they're in?
Yeah, great question. The 3 that come to mind, one is financial performance. Top, like number one. If you do not have good financials as a business owner, first off, I don't know how you're sleeping at night. And actually, the stats show that business owners don't, who have cash flow problems. I've been in that situation before. I've been in it with companies that I've worked with. It's overwhelming, and there's a way to be able to fix that. So you need to have not only accurate financials. So make sure, what I mean by that is make sure that you're reconciling your financials to your bank statements so that you know that the activity is accurate. Make sure you're reconciling your balance sheet, you know, your liability accounts, so that you know that what's shown on your balance sheet is accurate. Further, take that information and use it so that everybody always talks this way, but my biggest thing is when you can get to a point in your business where you are being proactive and making decisions in your business instead of reacting to things that happen to your business, you've really got the secret sauce. That's what it is. And you need to do that through budgeting and cash flow management plans. And I could just go on and on around that. The second thing that comes to mind is growth potential. Businesses need to run their company in a way where they don't become stagnant. So a lot of businesses that I've worked with, you come in and you start working with them and you're like, wow, you haven't had, you know, any revenue growth in the last 5 years. And, you know, they're always like, well, you know, that's because I choose to do this or I choose to do that or, you know, whatever, but we're really happy with just the customers we have. Okay, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem with that is that a buyer is not going to want to buy a business that hasn't been growing. They want to see top line revenue growing. And most important, they want to see the bottom margins. They want to see that is growing. They want to make sure that you're running a company that not only has great revenue, but is cash flow positive and has free cash flow. And so if you don't have a business plan, even if you're not the one that's going to implement that plan 5 years out, but if you don't have a plan and you haven't been running your company that way, it's really hard to stand out to buyers as a company that, you know, they would want to buy. It's just harder to sell and you're not as profitable. And then the third thing that comes to mind that I think is a top priority is Warren Buffett talks about the moat. So you want to have a differentiator, a unique selling proposition in your company. It's really important. And what Warren Buffett always talks about is, I want to make sure that the investments I have, that they have a moat, a differentiator that protects that company from competitors or new entrants in the business to be able to take that service I'm providing or that product I'm selling away from me, like overnight. And I don't think business owners realize the opportunities they have to create unique selling propositions in their business that are so simple. I mean, it doesn't have to be something where, you know, hey, you know, we give you this for free and this for free when you do this. It can just be the model that you have and how you treat those customers. What is your, you know, customer service in your business? And if you're a VIP, if you treat your customer like a VIP and you as the business owner have that culture and that mindset established amongst your employees, where every time that customer calls in, they're not always right, but they are our customer and we're going to treat them as that way. And we're going to make sure that we provide the service that they want and they're happy with that service and they have no reason to go anywhere else. That's a moat. That's a unique selling proposition. So I think those three things, financial performance, growth potential, and then creating a differentiator in your business are the three top, you know, drivers of value that a business owner can start working on today.
Before I take it back to the financial part, because I have a tidbit on that, I completely agree with you on the unique selling proposition. And I think that the confusion is happening with a lot of business owners on the fact that everything online and articles is talking about innovation and innovation and innovation. There are some businesses and some business model that, sure, you can innovate by the way that you produce your service, but it's not like you need to go build a whole different platform to compete against different platforms that are in the market, because not everybody is technology forward.
That's right. And I mean, how many, boy, you both could probably give story after story, you know, working with business owners who make that mistake. You know, there's a difference between, you know, providing services that your customers need and being the one-stop shop for everything. There's no way that you can be successful if you are doing everything for that customer. And so you need to figure out, what is the one thing that we do in this company? How do we do it the best? Perfect it. And then, are there any other bundles or add-ons that make sense that complement that one thing and our customers need? And it's okay to do that as long as it's profitable. I think that's the other thing. A lot of times I've seen businesses where you go in, their gross margins are so low and you go, boy, what happened here? You know, 8 years ago, you were doing pretty well and now your margins have been down, you know, 20%. And when you start digging in, you realize, oh, I see what happened. Gosh, did you realize that these two services that you added, I had a home repair business that I worked with for a while, actually a franchise that I worked with several of the franchisees. And the franchisor had suggested that the franchisee add on this maintenance model to their service offerings. Well, the problem was it was very hard to make it profitable. And so it hurt a lot of the companies. And it was a simple fix. It was just a matter of, okay, let's not offer this anymore. Let's partner with somebody that does this. This is their one thing. And when they made that switch, it not only changed the profitability of the company, it also improved the net promoter score, the customer service satisfaction, because they were no longer providing something that they really don't do, that they're not that set up good and or set up to do. They started utilizing a company that was the best at doing that. And so then they had raving fans.
I love that example because I truly believe that growth happens through partnership and collaboration. And there are so many business owners that have one client ask them, do you do this? And they see it as an opportunity instead of really going after the masses and seeing, like, does this service, if we started, have a good ROI for the company? And instead, they want to fit all of the shoes. And so they start diversifying a little bit too fast. So I love the whole concept of strategic partnerships, outsourcing, hiring experts, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to go back to the financial part because I just attended a really cool session on debt financing. And I'm a big proponent of debt financing rather than equity financing, just because I'm a control freak and I want to keep my company for myself, not necessarily share, well, aside from this one. But down the line, you know, people grow a company and they see debt as like this big negative thing. So they go after VCs and angels and PE or private equity, but very few look at debt. And I found out that only 42% of women business owners actually get a credit card when they first start their business. And there is a pride factor about the fact that I grew this entire business bootstrapped, debt-free. And one of the bankers and one of the business owners at that working session said, why? So I'm asking you that question. Why do you think? And I think it has to do with the fact that a lot of women don't understand their numbers.
I agree with you. You know, that's a whole nother topic that we could go into, right?
Rather you can than come back. You can come back if you want to.
Right. Like maybe that, you know, grade school math teacher just never, you know, took an interest in, you know, helping us. I don't know what it was, but I agree with you, you know, and I'll come back. One of the questions that I get asked a lot of times is, does it make sense? I'm seasonal, and so I have to buy a bunch of inventory in certain time frames, and I find that's really hard, and it stresses me out, quite frankly, bringing down my cash, you know, to the level I have to in order to buy that inventory. Is there a better way of doing that? And so I always ask the simple question, do you have a line of credit?
Thank you.
And a lot of right? And a lot of them go, oh no, should I? I'm like, absolutely. That's what that's there for. That's the whole purpose of a line of credit, is to help you during those time frames when it's not meant to be used, you know, like a conventional loan. You're not supposed to borrow from it and then just leave it. You want to be able to borrow from it, be able to utilize it for those seasonal times where you've got to buy, you know, more inventory in order to stock up because there's a discount or whatever. So that's the first thing that I always recommend to a business owner. And if you have a good relationship with your bank, it's fairly easy to get a line of credit, you know, of about $150,000. And even if you're not using it continuously, I'll tell you, that's a nice, you know, safety net to have in place in case something happens, right? You know, I agree with you on the equity and the debt. And I was trying to think of some of the stories that I've seen. I get a lot of business owners, a lot, that call in to my company and they say, listen, I want to, you know, be able to figure out how to grow this company. I have this opportunity with a customer and I don't know how to do this. And so I think what I'm looking for is to bring in a partner. And sometimes that's a good thing to do. You know, sometimes it's not. And I think the reason for getting a partner is not because you have this opportunity with a customer and you just don't have the funds to be able to take them on. You know, my recommendation around that is coming back to what you've just, the seminar you went through, is how about we look at getting you some capital to help you do that? Or as hard as this may be, maybe right now is not the right time to take on that customer. You know, you might be in a place where you should wait, you know, another year or two before you're taking on a large customer where you need to take on debt or much less a partner. Don't take on a partner for that. So coming back to the financials and, you know, why women don't pay attention or don't realize the value of that. I don't know why that is. I would like to think that we are smart, you know, I mean, we are so intelligent and we are so organized as a gender. That's one of the things that, you know, helps us to stand out in the business community is we're very process driven and we do think of things that maybe someone else would not. So I think, again, it comes back to what they don't know, because some women do know this. So it's just a matter of did you go into this business because you went, boy, I love selling this product and service and I want to take control of my life and I want to make money for myself. Awesome. All great reasons, you know, to start a business. But there's a little bit more you need to do there to create a business plan and set your business up successfully so you are not one of those, what is it, 85% of businesses end up going out of business their first 5 years. I think I'm saying that stat correctly. And usually it's cash flow.
Yeah.
So, right. So what I would suggest is you need to, this is where the partnerships and the affiliates come into play. First off, one of the best decisions you can make is to, in whatever you can afford, and there's phases to that, but work towards bringing in a business coach to help you. Because that business coach is going to have the experience and the know-how to be able to get you where you want to go quicker and more efficiently. It keeps you from making the mistakes, you know, that a lot of business owners make, because we work with so many business owners and, you know, we know the process to be able to be successful. But coming back to financials, yes, sometimes when you first start a business, you've got to take care of that on your own. And I think people downplay that. You know, they go, well, I know how to balance a checkbook. Okay, well, that's great. So if your QuickBooks is very easy and very friendly to use. So in the first couple of years, if you can't afford a bookkeeper, then do it, but make sure you're doing it. But I can tell you that that is not a good use of your time. The minute that you can afford to bring in a bookkeeper to take that over, trust me, that is a good investment to offload that and then also to bring in a business coach to help you along the way. And I really think it comes back to they just don't know what they don't know until they know it, till they hear like this podcast and they go, oh, okay, great. Now I understand. Get a line of credit, try to bring in a business coach, make sure I'm doing my bookkeeping, and then don't feel like I need to do everything because you shouldn't.
Preferably don't use the line of credit to pay for the business coach.
Right? Boy, that's for sure. There's so many different options out there for small business owners. And as we're sitting here, you know, as I'm talking about all of this, really, it really comes back to planning, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like you need to sit down and create a business plan. I don't care if it's just you. You're the business plan. You know, I was guilty of that. I remember one of the first businesses that I created. I thought, okay, well, I've got the accounting side, right? And I'm good at sales and I know how to hire and manage people. And so I'm just going to start this business and see what happens to it. And I was successful. Be careful what you ask for. I grew quickly. That was where if I had sat down and had a business plan, I would have known how much growth can I take on? How do I manage that growth? You know, what are my next steps? And I probably would have avoided making several mistakes because I didn't have anybody helping me.
Well, and I always say that is the number one reason why I became a business advisor is because as someone who owned 10 businesses, even if they were franchises, it was a franchise that had no systems and processes in place. And so I was literally creating and doing everything. Didn't have the support from the franchise system like I should have. And the reason why I became a business advisor is I said, man, if I would have just had someone that's already been here, done this, I could have avoided so many mistakes and I could have moved quicker. And that was my entire purpose, is because I thought, man, even though I had 3 business partners, we were all swimming in the same sea, right? We needed someone that had that 50,000 foot view that could teach us what it is we needed to do to be more effective and efficient. Now, am I grateful for all the failures? Absolutely, because it's now made me have that opportunity to share those failures and successes with others and help them move quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? That is so important. When it's your business, man or female, because I'm sorry, male or female, everybody always says, well, it's just the lower market that, you know, feels such a connection or identity to their business. No, I can tell you that I've had some tears in the middle market too, right? And not all women. So reason also I feel it's so important to bring in an advisor like such as yourself is that third party is not as emotionally connected. And so you're going to be able to say some hard truths that they need to hear to keep them from making mistakes or maybe think about it differently. Maybe there's a different way of doing this. But further, we all joke about the baby thing now, but it's so true. I start my presentations off with everyone thinks their baby is pretty. Everyone. I mean, and you can Google it, right? And there's some funny, funny, funny pictures out there where, oh, what a cute baby, but oh.
It's so true.
Right? So it's like that advisor saying, yes, you've done a good job. You've created a good business. Your baby is very pretty. But, you know, it's not the end all be all. Like, it's not going to win probably the Gerber baby contest. Let's just say it that way.
It's not pageant ready. Let's make it pageant
right.
ready.
Not pageant ready. Yes. But, you know, and that we're laughing about it because we're all guilty of it. I did it myself. I did it myself. I had already, I mean, I had, you know, I had the experience knowing, okay, I shouldn't have my identity tied to my business. And I'd already seen mistakes that some business owners made exiting their business with not, you know, thinking through what does that post-closing look like. And I made the mistake because it's very easy to do until you've had that experience. And everybody was saying to me, Marla, maybe you should think about doing this or that or whatever. But I was so confident this was the way to go. And again, it's not that I made a mistake in who I chose. I just don't think it was the right exit for me as a business owner. If I had an advisor that said, do you really want to sell to private equity and give, you know, and tie in part of your equity, you know, as an earnout in this company, and you're going to be with them for a long time, not making decisions anymore, I would have said, oh, heck no. But I had never experienced that before.
Which is also, interestingly, I think that there is a tremendous value. Like Christy and I have owned multiple businesses, started, exited, et cetera, et cetera. You have gone through the exit process yourself. So you understand the intricacies and what you give up as well when you are selling that baby to somebody else to take care of it. Like, it's a heartbreak and also an opportunity all at once. And I think that's also what makes us different from a lot of partners out there, is because we've been there, done that, gotten all of the t-shirts and all of the, you know, lanyards, and we understand what it takes. Like Christy was talking about failure. I've had several ones of them, and they're all learning experiences. And I think that makes us even more valuable. So, and one of the things that you said at the very beginning of this recording is that you sold this past business, Raincatcher, because you didn't like the ICP, you didn't like the ideal client persona. And client personas are very important to successful businesses. Riches are in the niches, and that's really, really important.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You know what? That is the one thing that I learned from that, you know, experience of making a decision, because it was a decision I was able to make, of whether or not I wanted to continue to run a company that I wasn't feeling 100% fulfilled in, and losing kind of that motivation and that purpose of why I started the company to begin with, why I purchased the company. I took a long time to come to that decision. And in the end, it was the best decision. And looking back, it's like, really, I could have made it about 6 months earlier if I had really, you know, there was a lot of pride that I had to work through. I'm not embarrassed to admit that, because, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why business owners do become entrepreneurs, is because we are confident. We do have drive and resilience and grit. And, you know, you don't do that usually because, you know, you're weak. You do it because you feel very confident in what you're doing. And so I had to work through that. And then I had to work through also, you know, what do I want to do? What does bring me purpose? What would bring me satisfy, you know, the results I want to have in the small business community? And so what helped me to do that was having conversations with my peers. So I'm involved with a lot of different groups that are incredible entrepreneurs, business owners. And it was just getting real and vulnerable and talking with them about it. And the more that I talked about it, and so-and-so might have helped me to look at it this way, and so-and-so might help me to look at it that way. And in the end, very quickly, when I was able to be more vulnerable and be more open and be real and talk about this decision, it was so obvious that this was the right decision. And it was. It was the right decision for Raincatcher and for the owners that continued that company. And it was the right decision for me, because now I'm so much happier, you know, helping the business owners that I love, and I feel, you know, purpose-driven to help. Like, it's important that you love what you do.
Absolutely. Marla, you have dropped tons of nuggets of wisdom here. I think anyone that has even considered or not considered selling their business, there's a lot of good piece of advice on where to start. How do people get in touch with you is going to be one question. And, you know, if you were to leave a small business owner with one piece of advice that you think could carry them through their entire career, what would that be?
Yeah. Don't be afraid to make a decision and make a mistake. Ooh. That's how you learn and that's how you grow. I think some of the biggest mistakes I made in my career, and what I've seen working with hundreds of business owners, is they're afraid to just make that decision. Think about it, you know, plan it, but make the decision because they're afraid they're going to be wrong. You might be. And have a plan B if you are wrong. But, you know, don't sit there and be scared to make that decision, because you're just wasting time. And it's not getting better. So I think that's the biggest advice is, you know, you are going to make mistakes as business owners, and don't be afraid of that, but plan, but don't be afraid of it. Yeah. I mean, for selling businesses and working with business owners, one, you know, I work with business owners between that under 5 million. I do go upwards sometimes, and I have lots of amazing, you know, merger and acquisition and investment groups that I'm I partner with and I'm affiliated with, including Raincatcher. So if you have a business and you're not sure what the valuation is, I can provide that. I'd love to talk with you. You can get a hold of me at BizNavigators, BizNavigators.com. And if you want to email me, that's Marla@BizNavigators.com. I love, love, love small business owners. So don't be afraid to reach out to me if you just have some questions. I may not have the answers. I'm definitely not a one-stop shop, but I have incredible, incredible professionals around me, like you both, you know. So I would be happy to talk with them and at least point them in the right direction, even if I can't help them. I hope what a business owner has heard today is don't run a business, you know, like it's going to run itself. You do have to run it. You have to plan. You have to prepare. And then get familiar with talking with a business coach, you know, or, you know, reading, you know, information about what does it take to create a successful business that you can sell someday. So that way you have that option. Even if you decide not to, that's your choice as a business owner, but set your business up so it becomes an asset so that you do have those options and it'll be more profitable.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Marla. I have a feeling there might be a second session down the road with some deeper insights that we can absolutely share. But thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with us today. And it was such a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed my time.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did recording it. If you like our show, please rate us, drop us a review on your favorite streaming app, and we'll catch you on the next episode. This was the Badass Women in Business Podcast by Christine Agnew.